Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse: Separation Anxiety Explained. My name is Stacey Bell, and I am from Focused Fun in the U.S., and with me today is...
I'm Ness Jones. I'm in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And before we get started with our special guest, I would just like to give a shout out to Shamika, who sent me a lovely email, and I just want to read a little snippet of it. Bear with me, humor me. She says, I'm writing to thank you for the wonderful resources you provide. You and Stacey have helped me so much. I initially, she reached out to a vet behaviorist for her dog, who was booked out for 3 months, but she said, thanks to you guys, I was able to identify my guy's needs and realize he has general anxiety. And I was able to confidently present my concerns and findings to my vet. And because of that, I got him on meds and we've developed a wonderful routine and he is doing amazing. So that is absolutely lovely, Shamika. I do thoughts to you though. So her dog Franklin, who she sent me videos of and it's lovely, he's got lymphoma. So he's on chemotherapy. So wishing you all the best.
Yes. And thank you for reaching out. Yeah. That was awesome. Well, today we have a super special guest. If you follow me at all on Facebook or Instagram, you have heard my shout outs to Megan and Bria. They are clients of mine, and Megan is one of the best dog moms ever. Has been so awesome in being consistent with her training and an awesome advocate for Bria. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Before you tell us all about your training, I would just love to know, what is it, Bria? What Bria is, her age, what breed she is, and maybe what you've been struggling with as well, before you found Stacey.
Okay, sure. Bria is 4 years old. She is a retired racing greyhound.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. That greyhounds always fascinate me, the ex-racers, yeah.
Yeah. She's the sweetest dog ever. She's extremely cuddly and snuggly. She always has her head in your lap if you're sitting down. But she struggles, obviously with the separation anxiety. She has some other anxiety issues going on as well that we are working through. The way the separation anxiety manifests itself is that she doesn't settle at all when I'm gone. She paces around the house. She'll stand at the door and whine. She never got to the point where she was being destructive or soiling or anything like that. Which, thank goodness, I think I was kind of on the lookout for separation anxiety, just having had another greyhound and, being involved with the greyhound community. So that's the biggest thing that we struggled with.
Great. Not great, but yeah, sorry. The greyhounds, the ex-racers really interest me because they're never alone, are they? They're brought up in a racing environment. They've got other dogs with them, other people. And then when they retire, they go into these pet homes. And suddenly they have to learn to be by themselves, and it's a shock to the system. So, yeah, thank you for rescuing, though.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, she's a pleasure. Everybody loves her, and she loves people, thank goodness. And she's not attached to me, which makes the training, it makes it a little bit easier for sure. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm the first home that she went into after she retired. 2 weeks after she retired, I picked her up, and she's been here ever since.
Did your other greyhound, was that also a ex-racer?
Yes, and he was.
Did she have separation anxiety?
No, he actually was like complete other end of the spectrum from Bria. He preferred to be alone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I could leave him for 12 hours, no problem, and he would be 100% fine. Yeah, so it was a bit of a shock going from him to her. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a big difference. That is a big difference. Megan and I started working together. It's been more than a year, I think.
I think it was July of last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And we started with door desensitization. That was your first exercises, doors of war, just working towards you, stepping towards the door. And I was like, aw, because I was looking up. I was trying to remember because we've been working together for so long. I'm like, where did we start?
So at the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a long road.
Yeah. And I think for Bria, one of the difficulties for her, I think, is that her routine changes, right? So and she's gotten so much better with this. It's really awesome. I mean, she's gotten so much more flexible as far as routine changes go. But in the beginning, it was almost like if Megan had somebody over for dinner, and that was like a change from the norm, then the exercise after that she would really struggle on. It was just having somebody over for dinner, which is something that you totally don't think about, right? It's a normal part of life, and you don't think that that would throw Bria off. But even just little things like that really did throw her off.
It's interesting that you even managed to pinpoint that, because I mean, we always ask our clients, Megan, to you know, let us know if the dogs went to the vets or daycare or, you know, had a bad day or whatever it was. But I would never have thought to ask somebody, did you have someone for dinner last night?
Well, when we started, with Bria, like some dogs, all dogs that are working through a home alone training experience variability, right? Like, we know that's a normal part. It's such a bummer part of it, and it can be so demoralizing, but you know, it's a normal part for everybody. But Bria was experiencing like more than normal variability. So we really amped up the stuff that we were tracking: enrichment, exercise, you know, anything that was different than the normal routine. We were like really trying to get specific, weather, how cold it is outside,
how windy it is.
Bria doesn't like to walk when it's cold outside, so that would affect training. So far this year, fingers crossed, it's starting to get cold here. Ness is opposite than us, so it's starting to get warm for her, but cold for us. But so far, Bria has been really good with the weather change. But there were like all things like that where you're like, okay, you know, we're just tracking everything, and we just tried to determine, does this make a difference for Bria or not? Another thing that I think that we kind of discovered a little bit later in working together is that for her, consistency in training is really important, right? So some dogs you can kind of get by with doing a little less training and they'll still kind of hold on to, you know, what they're learning. But for her, and I think we discovered this as she was getting higher in durations, and then like, you know, Megan works, she works from home, but she, you know, so she's, even though her schedule is maybe more flexible than some people, she still has to work, right? And so it was getting harder to fit those training sessions in. And then, so we were starting to see her wobble a little bit again. And then that's when we added more scenarios. And we, some easy wins, some like kind of mid-length sections, and, you know, and just really split things up so that there were some doable times, even when Megan was busy at work and couldn't fit in a longer session. And that I think really helped.
It did. Yeah, absolutely. The variability in the sessions, it also took pressure off me as well, as we got into like the 45 minute hour long sessions, you know, having a long day at work and then having to be out of the house where I can't do anything for that length of time every evening. after work, having that option, that flexibility to do a different session was really helpful for me mentally. And then I think we also kind of around that same time, we switched up when she's doing her primary training. Like I changed my work schedule a little bit. So I go in a little bit later one day a week so that I can do more morning time training. And I think that was a huge deal for her also. Mm-hmm. It's easier for her to train in the morning. And so we got made a lot more progress when we made that switch also. Yeah. And it all kind of happened around the same time, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And then we also tried to do, like, when we knew there was a routine change, like, instead of saying, okay, well, if you have somebody over for dinner, don't train the next day. We said, let's just do an easy win and start, like, kind of warming her up to being able to handle that difference in her training. And that, I think, has worked really well as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was, like, instant. So. As soon as we started doing that, no more hiccups.
Right.
When I had over. Yeah.
Yeah. So that worked out really well too.
So I'm actually fascinated to know how long you can leave her now.
We're up to about an hour and a half.
Brilliant.
At this point. So it's very, very slow progress still, especially since I'm not doing those longer sessions
as often,
more than like 3 times a week at this point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
And it's been like steady increase with not very many bobbles in the last several months. So that's definite progress.
What do you do now with your hour and a half? Do you leave or are you hanging around?
I'm mostly hanging close by at this point. One of our scenarios is a car scenario where I do leave in the car. That scenario is a little bit shorter. It's only around 20 minutes at this point. But the hour and a half, I usually stay around. Like, I'll do yard work where she can't see me and it's quiet. So, but hopefully I have done some errands here and there, short ones, but I haven't done anything where I've gone away that whole hour and a half yet.
So she hasn't had any major hiccups for a long time by the sounds of it. Now, once you identified the things that were triggering her, for want of a better way of putting it.
Yeah.
So she'll have like an odd session here or there that she doesn't do well on, but she's been super consistent, especially compared to her earlier days. And, you know, we along the way have also made med changes. So, you know, that contributes as well, and, you know, try to work through some of her other fears that might, especially ones that would contribute to training or get in the way of training, like, the lawnmower fear. She's come so far with the lawnmower, but, you know, Megan lives in a neighborhood and we're thinking like, you know, if a neighbor starts up a lawnmower and that frightens her, you know, that's kind of
busts
the session, right?
Yeah.
So early on, we worked through that and she's a superstar with lawnmower. You also live across from those fields. So that's also like another lawn mowing.
Gosh, that's tricky. Do you mask the sound of it then? Or?
No, actually she's okay with it now. Unless it's super close. We started with her having to go to another room when the neighbors were mowing the lawn. And if I had to mow my lawn, I would take her to my dad's house. And he would watch her while I did my own lawn. But by the end of last summer, she was pretty good. Like I could leave her here at my house while I mowed the lawn and she would settle on the couch just fine. And at this point she notices, I mean, she's more alert when they're mowing and she's awake the whole time, but she's calm and lying on her bed just fine. So I don't have to worry about the sound too much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really proud of her for that. That she moved through that really quickly. She did. You know, as far as desensitizing to a scary noise goes, she moved through that really quickly. So you did an excellent job with that.
Thanks. With your guidance.
Teamwork.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else we tried to do. I think another thing that we really tried to do to add flexibility for Bria is, like, instead of giving her an enrichment, like a Kong every day at, you know, X amount of time, we tried to, you know, can we give her something similar but different? Can we, you know, increase the window in which we give it to her? So just things didn't, the routine wasn't quite as rigid. And so we tried to soften things that way. And I think that she responded well to that. Mm-hmm. So I'm really proud of all the work that you guys have done. You've come such a long way.
We have.
No, you really have. I mean,
how would you describe the training, Megan? Like, as in, when you're about to do it, how do you feel about it? I know that's a bit of a tricky question to ask, but do you feel, are you concentrating on the end goal, or do you feel like it's a chore, or
for a while there it did feel like a chore until we made those changes that we talked about earlier. There was a point in time where I was extremely upset about it, that we weren't further along. It was around the year mark that we'd been doing it, and she was still only around like a half hour at that time. I melted down, and I considered rehoming her at that point. But then we made the changes, and things just kind of, it was almost overnight that things got easier. Wow. And now I'm to the point where I'm calm about it. I'm taking it day by day. You know, it's manageable. Thank goodness for my dad, who's nearby, that he's retired. I can basically call him up and say, can I bring her over? I need to leave for a while. And he's always there. I have some friends, my sister, you know, that village helps, with things. And so it's definitely manageable right now. And I also, I think I came to terms with it, with the lack of spontaneity that I'm just probably going to have to deal with for the rest of the time that she's with me. And that's fine. You know, I'm okay with planning things. Even when we get to the point that she can stay longer, I think I'm always going to have to think about that separation anxiety and what does she need to feel comfortable with me leaving. And I'm okay with that at this point.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good. And I think that, I mean, I'm really glad that you talked about like the rough spot in your journey, because I think that's really normal too, right? Mm-hmm. To have those feelings of kind of buyer's remorse, but it's not buyer's remorse because you're talking about another living being, but that same kind of like, you know, oh no, I don't know if I can do this kind of feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That feeling of maybe I made a mistake, maybe I bit off more than I can chew kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think, you know, just being able to talk through that together is a really nice part of working with somebody, because it can feel so isolating, right? Because I think even with your friends and family, I mean, they know what you're going through and they know the sacrifices that you make, but it's not that, knowing that and then living that are two different things, right?
Right.
So,
Yeah. Yeah. And I do have very supportive friends and family, but you're right. It is, they're not living it.
They often don't understand. They might be sympathetic or empathetic,
right,
but they really don't understand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
I look forward to hearing when you, you know, I think you know, it sounds like you're just going to keep going up.
Hopefully.
Let's hope. Yeah. We both have everything crossed that she continues to progress the way that she has been.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So how did you find Stacy?
Through the podcast, actually.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I went through probably what everybody else does, is searching the internet to try to find the answer. And you kind of go through all of the surfacey kind of advice that's out there. Leave the music on, or try this or try that, and none of it works. and I have a science background, and so I appreciate the evidence-based approach to things. When I found the podcast, it was exactly what I was looking for. And it took me, when Bria arrived, she wasn't spayed. They're not spayed or neutered when they're at the track. And then she actually was with me for a little bit longer before she got spayed, because she went into heat shortly after she arrived. So we had to wait for that. So it was probably, she arrived in May, and Stacy, I think we started working like mid-July or something.
I remember working together. It was at the beginning of us working together, because she had to go to another state, didn't she, to get
spayed.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember.
Yeah. And that,
and I was really worried that would negatively affect training, because, you know, she would be loaded into this van with somebody she doesn't know, with other dogs, go to this place and then be driven back, and then Megan would pick her up. But, you know, for all of her love of routine, that kind of stuff where you think surely this is going to negatively affect her, she was fine.
She was
absolutely
fine.
Why did she have to come to another state? Was that because of COVID or?
It was the vet that the adoption group works with was in a different state. So they just do like a quick overnight trip. They take several dogs and then they all get spayed or neutered at the same time.
So what you were saying about, you know, you searched on Google and YouTube, and, you know, you read this, that, and the next thing. And I imagine you also got a lot of conflicting advice, because it's so confusing, to people saying completely different things. Do you feel now, looking back, that you could have done this without Stacy, without, you know, reaching out to a specialist?
Absolutely. Yeah, not at all. I did find like some training plans, but I tried to use them, but I just wasn't consistent with them, because I think that human feedback, as far as what's going on and like looking at the videos of her, I think that's invaluable. Because I could look at them and not
see what Stacy saw.
Yeah.
And also she can tailor it specifically to your dog. When you're looking at generic plans on the internet, they're not specific to your dog. So, you know, if your dog, which you've already, you know, Stacy obviously identified very much a creature of routine, and any little thing can throw them out, there's no way you would have been able to figure that out on your own.
Greyhounds, like, they can be stoic and not be very, I guess they can be very subtle in their reactions to things. So having someone else to look at that is very helpful.
Yeah, I was going to say the first thing. Do you remember in the beginning, I'm like, okay, send me a picture of when she's relaxed. Okay, now send me a video of when she's, you know, doing this, because she is like, it's like her ears are here or here. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, like other dogs where their ears might be way back, or, you know, so we really had to, you know, get in there and kind of compare those little micro movements, just because she's not super expressive. You know, it's not super clear.
Yeah. So I think the human feedback is definitely, it is 100% worth it. Absolutely. Yeah. And someone to help keep you consistent too.
Yeah, I do think the accountability, I think especially when you're experiencing variability in your training, and so you're not getting like, oh, another win, like that can keep you going in itself. But when you hit variability or, you know, much less a regression, it's just like, if you're doing it on your own and all you're getting is like, you know, another session where Bria struggled or something like that, it's hard to stick with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. It is, or to not push too hard either when things are going well.
Right.
It's hard not to say, oh, she did this amount of time today, I'm going to add on a whole huge chunk of time the next time and see what happens.
Right.
So yeah, it keeps you grounded, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Ness, why are you muted? Is there a wrestling match going on behind you?
There's a wrestling match.
So Megan, Ness has, yeah. She's got them. They're adorable.
They're a bit bored because obviously they haven't been out this morning. So they're making their own fun.
Yeah. Okay. So Megan, can you think of anything else that, you know, might encourage our listeners, kind of glean from your experience?
Stick with it, I guess, because, mm-hmm. and definitely have that dialogue with your, whoever you're working with. If you haven't gotten in touch with Stacey or Ness yet, do that. but things will get better. I know sometimes it can feel like you're stuck in the muck and the mire, but it definitely, talk it through and it will get better.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, it's a joy to speak with you today and also to work with you and Bria. You guys are big favorites of mine.
Thanks. You're a favorite of ours too. I appreciate you asking us to be here today.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, it's great to
Ness,
talk
do you
to you.
Have Megan. Anything else?
No, I don't. It's just really nice to talk to you and just hear about your progress and how it went. Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on. Yeah.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you guys for joining us on Tales from the Doghouse today. Thank you, Megan, for sharing your story with us. Anybody out there that's feeling isolated or overwhelmed or just really struggling or not even struggling, maybe you're at the beginning of your journey and you want to be proactive, reach out to Ness or I. We can help. This is Stacy from Focused Fun. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Focused Fun Dogs. And Ness here is from Australia.
G'day. Yes, I am from Australia, nessjones.com if you want to reach out to me, or Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded on Facebook. Thank you for joining us, and thank you so much, Megan. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Sure has. Keep up the good work, Megan.
Thanks.